I'm Joanna Shanks.
I'm Emma Taylor.
And this is Murder, She Spoke. So, the chat.
What have you been up to, Joanna? Tell me.
What is the chat? My chat. What have I been up to? Not a huge amount. Lockdown life continuing. Easing off now, though, thank God, because my hair is an absolute bird's nest and I cannot wait to get to the hairdressers next week. I've taken some time off work to go. I am genuinely looking forward to it. I cannot wait. And I am definitely doing a before and after photo because there's going to be like a huge transformation. Yeah, apart from that, I haven't been doing a huge amount. Finished Unsolved Mysteries.
Awesome.
Now missing it so much that I am watching the original series.
Where did you find it? Did you find it online?
Prime.
Okay. Oh, I've got Prime. Oh, that's good.
Yeah, it's on Prime. So I'm now watching that on Prime because I finished. I didn't realise that the new series is only 6 episodes.
I know. So, I could have done with a good few more.
Yeah, not enough.
It's very well produced. So I don't know if they spent a lot of money doing that, maybe.
It is very well done. I had started watching the Jeffrey Epstein documentary. I'd watched a couple of episodes of it, but to be honest, I think I just felt a bit sickened by it that I didn't end up finishing it because, I just felt a bit gross about the whole thing. And I think I just kind of decided I didn't want to watch it anymore. So I didn't continue on with that. Other than that, I haven't been up to a great deal. No new podcasts to talk about. I haven't been listening to podcasts too much recently. I have been just doing some other bits and bobs and hobbies and things. So, not a huge amount on the true crime front. What about you?
I watched something and it was called Catching a Killer. It's a series. And this one in particular was called A Knock at the Door, the Hang Yin Leung murder. And it was the murder of an older Chinese lady down south. And it was just really interesting because it was a spate of burglaries at Chinese households just after Chinese New Year. And they were targeting them because they often give each other gifts of cash around about that time. And it was, she actually, kind of spoiler alert, unfortunately, she passed away. I think it was a couple of days after this burglary. So they were really, really violent towards her. She's in her 70s. She'd come over from Hong Kong. She'd been in the police over in Hong Kong. She had a really interesting life. Her son was talking about it and her husband as well. And then they set up a takeaway when they were over here and were just pretty happy living their lives and doing their thing. And they talked about when they retired, they were going to travel the world together. And then this happened on the night that, you know, she went to report. So she tried to chase them down the street, which is quite remarkable.
Wow, badass.
Yeah, after they kind of left the property. And then she went to the police station, gave a full statement. And then unfortunately, they found out that she'd hemorrhaged inside. I think it was in her abdomen. And it was too risky to do surgery. So they put her in a medically induced coma. And her son and her husband had to make the decision to turn off life support at whatever period of time later. But it was all about a lot of the investigation that they were doing, even down to the investigators watching hours and hours of CCTV frame by frame, because they were pretty sure that they knew who did it. I cried, actually. I'm not really normally a crier at most things like that, and you'll know yourself, we watch a lot of true crime things and I do think you become slightly immune to it. But yeah, it was just incredibly sad. The husband, when the wife at her funeral, he was bowing to the coffin and apologising to her and stuff. And it was hard going. But it was a really, really interesting watch to see how the police investigated it and the avenues that they went down, because there was no forensics. So a lot of it was old fashioned police work. So yeah, I would definitely recommend that.
When did that take place?
I want to say 2014, let me double check.
Okay.
Yes, so, fairly recent.
All right, okay, so not too long ago.
She's murdered in Milton Keynes. Sorry, she was actually 64 years old. I thought she was older than that. So she was murdered around the Chinese New Year on January 31st, 2017. She normally would have been at the restaurant, but she had taken the evening off because she had a cold. And these burglars came to the door, asked how many people were in the property. She said one, and they just burst in. They stole jewellery, cash, and they actually stole a long service medal that she'd had from being in the Hong Kong police as well. They threatened her with an ice pick and kind of hit her a lot to the back of the head and in her abdomen, things like that. She'd actually fought off breast cancer previously, so she was a bit of a fighter. And it's really interesting hearing the way that the son speaks about her. And I feel like I get a lot more out of these programs where you hear a lot more about the victim and not just the perpetrators and the crime itself.
What was did you say it was Catch a Killer, it was called?
Catching a Killer. Catching a killer, and this particular episode was called A Knock at the Door.
And what channel is it on?
Yeah, it's Channel 4 documentary, Catching a Killer. And it's the episode A Knock at the Door, the murder of Hang Yin Lung. And they said that it was incredibly unusual because it's very rare that a murder victim has the chance to give a statement about the people that murdered her. So yeah, really interesting.
Okay, I might need to give that a shout. So what case have you got for me today?
I have a bit of an older case for us today, and it's a disappearance. Have you heard of the disappearance of Sandy Davidson?
Don't think so.
Okay. This comes from 1976, so it is a wee bit before our time. However, Sandy went missing from my birthplace in Irvine in Ayrshire. And I honestly was just having a look through the missing persons website and the Police Scotland missing persons cases. And his picture just caught my eye. He was a little boy. He was almost 4 years old, and he has this massive head of curly blonde hair and big blue eyes, and he's just adorable. And I think I was just drawn to click on him and then find out a little bit more. And then I realised that he'd gone missing from my birthplace. So I thought, well, that's pretty interesting. I'll go and have a look at it. It was the 23rd of April in 1976. It was a Friday. His full name was Sandy Jardin Davidson. He was almost 4 years old. He was living in the Birchie area of Irvine in Ayrshire in Scotland with his parents, Margaret and Philip, and his sister, Donna. On that day, Sandy and his sister were at their grandparents' home on St Kilda Street. It was only a few doors down from where they lived with their parents. And they were being looked after while their parents were at work. The grandparents had stepped inside briefly, and the garden gate was either opened or blew open, and the children had an Afghan hound called Kissy, which is a very sweet name for a dog, and Kissy ran out onto the road. Sandy went after the dog and Donna followed him. Donna was only 2 years old at the time. She doesn't have any memories of this happening, and unfortunately she doesn't have any memories of her brother either. She says that, you know, trauma has probably blocked a lot of them out. But reports state that she ran back in very distressed and told her grandparents that a bad man had taken Sandy. Sandy was never seen again, and he's currently on Police Scotland's list of long-term missing cases. As I said, Sandy had very curly blonde hair, which was the reason for his nickname Sheepskin. And he had blue eyes. He looks like a little cherub. There were several reports at the time from neighbours that he was seen walking away holding a man's hand. And after one of several appeals over the years, a man came forward who had been working on a construction site very close to where Sandy went missing. Around 2011, he stated that he had seen the boy walking away holding a man's hand, but as he wasn't distressed and he seemed quite happy, he thought he must know the man. The man was reportedly fair-haired and in his 40s. Apparently, he had also reported this at the time of the disappearance, but Sandy's sister Donna does not recall the family being made aware of this information. Another neighbour reported the man Sandy being seen with was Romani in appearance and may have been a traveller. Another theory was that the young boy wandered off and fell into the local river or otherwise died accidentally. After the disappearance, there was a huge search effort with police dredging local rivers, there was helicopters, and they even dug up an area of the construction site nearby where bulldozers had been working on the day that Sandy disappeared. Unfortunately, no sign of the toddler was found. Over the years, the family, particularly Donna, Sandy's sister, have kept the case in the media with appeals, petitions, and a Facebook page, which is called Help Find Sandy Davidson. In 2014, the Broomlands Primary School, which was constructed around the time that Sandy disappeared, was demolished and rebuilt. The family petitioned the local government and council to search the grounds for remains whilst that was happening, but their request was not granted. In 2013, an individual who believed they may be Sandy had their DNA tested. However, there was no match. They also have Donna's DNA on file and have compared it to different kind of genealogical and criminal DNA databases, but as yet there have been no matches. This, I think, you'll find quite interesting. In 2015, a man from the area approached Sandy's family on Facebook to tell them about a harrowing experience he had had when he was younger, which could be connected to Sandy's disappearance. The man alleges that he was abducted and violently abused by a teenage girl around the same time that Sandy disappeared. An Express article states, the man, who cannot be named for legal reasons, said, I lived on Gaia Terrace in the Broomlands estate. The next street was Plaida Avenue and then St Kilda Bank, which is where Sandy's parents and grandparents lived. There was a rope swing on the river and I had been playing down there with some other kids. I was going back to my house and this lassie ambushed me and dragged me into the bushes. She had kind of a den inside a big hedge, like a lair, and you had to crawl to get in it. She smashed me on the head with a rock and did things to me. I remember crying out in terror for my mother. I must have passed out because I'd been missing for a while, about an hour or so, and the locals were out looking for me. The next thing I remember was seeing policemen everywhere and I was being taken to the hospital. I know what happened to me. There was obviously something very, very wrong with this girl. So the man believes the incident took place in the summer of 1976, following Sandy's disappearance in April of that year, or it possibly could be the following summer. He added, looking back, I think she was like Mary Bell. This lassie was an animal. I don't think police ever really asked me what happened. They thought she was bullying me or something. 5 or 6 days later, they took me and my mother to see her parents who lived on Plaida Avenue. She wasn't there, but I remember being absolutely terrified. His ordeal left him mentally and physically scarred. And in a cruel twist of fate, he later became the victim of alleged sexual and physical abuse at Scottish boarding school. He explained that he buried the memory of what happened to him as a child until 2012, when a violent assault in his workplace triggered a flood of unhappy recollections. There have been no media updates online regarding this report and no new leads have been identified. Sandy's parents ultimately divorced as a result of the stress following the disappearance, and Sandy's sister Donna, who continues to search for him and leads the appeals, says she lives with guilt on a daily basis. She's also said that she believes Sandy was murdered in hopes that this was the case rather than him being abducted by a paedophile. Sandy's mum, Margaret, believes that Sandy's alive and hopes that he was raised in another family. The picture accompanying this episode shows Sandy as he looked when he disappeared and an age progression photo from around 2017. So it's not entirely up to date, but it's pretty close. Donna made another appeal in April this year saying, last year I made a promise to myself that it was time for me to have a life instead of feeling guilty or feeling it would have been better if it was me. I've had quite a lot to deal with and taken it on my own shoulders, and I need to sort myself out to keep fighting. I don't believe he's alive, but I believe we will find him. I think he's close by to where he went missing. Everyone's locked in their gardens right now, and maybe someone is going to dig something up one day. I think if he was found, it would be by accident, but we need to know. I've done everything I can, but if anyone knows anything or if anyone comes across anything, please contact police. There's nothing worse than not knowing. So that is the case of the disappearance of Sandy Davidson.
That's so sad. I don't think I'd heard of that, but like you say, that is a wee bit before our time. So the police investigation, do you know if they interviewed a number of people? Was it quite a big investigation? Was there not many leads?
There was a huge amount of manpower thrown at it initially. It was massive. It was one of the most widely publicised cases at the time as well, and for some time afterwards. It literally just seems as though he'd vanished into thin air. But I think something that the family were frustrated by was the fact that there was various people saying that they'd seen him walking away with a man and mentioning a car as well. A couple of people said they thought they'd seen him get into a car. So they were wondering why they were spending so much money and time, you know, looking around that area, because he could have been miles away by that point. Mm-hmm. And certainly he was never found. There was also a lot of construction going on. So theoretically, someone could have murdered him and hidden him in, you know, the ground somewhere, and then it could have been concreted over. It's really hard to say. It doesn't seem like the girl that was mentioned has been identified as a viable suspect, or certainly there doesn't seem to have been any evidence surrounding that. It just seems really odd that they were so close together, those things happening. It does seem really strange to me.
Absolutely. And the incident with the girl that the other boy experienced, that's significant. That's not just pushing a boy over and running away, for example. It sounds like it was really violent. And did he not say it was a teenage girl as well?
Yep.
And he was, did it say how old he was at that time?
It doesn't tell you. I don't know if that's also to protect his identity, maybe.
Right, okay.
Because there can only be so many people from that road. You know what I mean? He's identified where he lived and...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, fair enough.
You know, if he said what age he was at that time, it probably would give it away a bit. But I'm guessing she was older than him, at least.
Mm-hmm. Well, if it was in 1976 and she was a teenager,
mm-hmm.
So yeah, it does sound like she was older than him anyway. That's really bizarre.
And also for that information to come out so much later on, the same as with the guy that was on the construction site. You know, it took him to the 2010s, halfway, you know, some point through them to get in contact. And the same with the guy that had been abducted by the girl. It's really unusual that so many years later, that's when people are coming forward. But that's why I think it is important that we cover these cases, because it just shows you that things can change along the line. And, you know, someone might have repressed memories for whatever reason. Maybe they're traumatized by seeing something happen. Maybe they know something, maybe they know someone who lived there that was acting strangely, or they saw them carrying a bag of something heavy in it. You know, there's so many things that just putting something back out into the limelight could hopefully trigger something.
Absolutely. And I know that you've said it before, and I agree that sometimes with the passage of time, you think that allegiances change. And perhaps if somebody was initially maybe not coming forward for fear of, you know, incorrectly incriminating someone, but now perhaps with the passage of time, they might say, no, do you know what, actually that was bizarre, and maybe their allegiances have changed and they could come forward and speak with the police about, you know, something that might seem innocuous, but that might be actually really pertinent to helping contribute to solving the crime.
I also wonder, if someone did take him, if they did come and open the gates, because it seems a little bit unlikely that if you're a grandparent and you were popping inside, you would leave a gate wide open with two children.
Very young children. Four.
Seems very unlikely. And if they are under the age of four, how likely is it they would be able to open a gate themselves? Well, actually, they didn't, did they? Because the dog ran out and they ran after it.
Yeah. I think I actually heard about this case, but I don't think I knew about the name and the specifics.
Mm-hmm.
But I think I'd heard it mentioned when I was younger by one of my parents about a boy that had been snatched, blonde-haired, blue-eyed boy. Also, the mention of potentially being taken by a Romani family, that's the bit that connected the case for me. I remember mention of that as well. And, you know, cases like that, you hope that it's just been somebody that can't have children that's, you know, taking a child and raise them as their own. That, you know, that's best case scenario, isn't it?
There was a sad statement in one of the articles that implied that his mother was saying, well, maybe it's just a man that was really lonely and wanted a wee boy to look after. And I just, I guess I'm very cynical, and obviously we've seen lots of horrible things happen. I absolutely wish that was the case.
I think as well, you know, in terms of dealing with the situation, I think you probably have to lie to yourself to a certain degree, because I think even knowing what we know, if it was your own child, I'm not sure that you could deal with the reality of it. I think you would have to really lie to yourself in order to be able to deal with it and live with it sort of day to day.
Can you imagine walking about and every person that you see that looks even a little bit like him, like you see a blonde haired boy walking down the street and you're like, hang on, I need to follow him. I need to follow him and see if that's my son. I can't imagine living like that.
I'll be honest. I mean, obviously, this is just my own assumption, but it sounds to me like the potential Romany angle is kind of nonsense. It sounds like the kind of thing that would be said at that time by, you know, a minority of people.
Absolutely. That was my feeling.
Yeah. And to be honest, in truthfulness, if a Romany family had a little boy with bright blonde hair and blue eyes, I think that he would stand out like a sore thumb. They don't think it would be too difficult to be like, that child doesn't look like the rest of his family.
Also, why would they want him?
Exactly. I mean, but yeah, to be honest, it just kind of sounds like nonsense to me. That
it sounds like a bit of bigotry going on.
Yeah, definitely.
But I did think it was important to mention it because it might jog some people's memories, even as to, oh yeah, remember when people thought that Romany person stole a child in Irvine. I think the other thing for me that rings really true about the account with the teenage girl, see if it was in Irvine generally. It's not that small. You know, you could say, well, you know, these things happen, there's kids all over the place. But the fact that it was within a couple of streets, and it would have been where the wee ones would walk past, and, you know, she probably would have seen that little one. She would have known what happened to him if it wasn't her that did it. It's very odd. It's just a really odd point.
It is an odd point, and also the behaviour is really
disturbing.
Really disturbing. Like I say, it's not just like a kid who pushes one kid over and then runs away. This is really violent. It's very violent and aggressive. And, you know, assuming from the tone of the case by a girl who's significantly older than her victim, who she sort of lured into this den, really quite, like you say, disturbing. The fact that it was within two streets, you would hope that the police have identified her and spoken with her. And if not, then you would think that would have to be a line of inquiry. But I think the fact that he's come forward so late on, and he can't remember if it was 1976 or 1977, the fact that he's only come forward, what was it, 2014, 2015, something like that?
2015. Also, for just another note, on one of the articles that I read, he insinuated that he worked in or around the criminal justice system. I don't know if he's in police, I don't know what he does, but he said that he'd worked with offenders, he knew about this type of thing, so that's how he could say that she was especially depraved.
Yeah, definitely, particularly depraved. And I think that just adds more credibility to his account then, if he's working around the criminal justice system, that it's given him pause for thought, that he's recollected this incident that occurred and he's looking at it through an adult's eyes with, you know, the knowledge that he has, whatever that is within criminal justice. To me, that just adds credibility to it.
Absolutely. It's too specific as well. It's too close. It's too similar.
It's not a vague childhood memory.
No, definitely not. So for me, that's the thing that's a bit of a sticking point. I do know that people were saw him with a man, but they're all quite vague. There's not that many specifics. You know, when you look at the reports, it just says, oh, a couple of people said they saw him walking hand in hand with a man. That could really be any child about that size and height. And but then it was quite distinctive looking, I would say.
Also, the one thing that I would be interested to know about a bit more or question further is that a two-year-old child said he was taken by a bad man. Now, if he's walking away holding the hand of a stranger, what about that screams bad man to a two-year-old child? To me, it doesn't. That would only come about as a result of maybe like a violent or swift action. I mean, obviously, I'm no psychologist, you know, I can't say for certain, but just an inkling, that's what it sounds like to me. Why would your four-year-old brother, if you're 2 years old, walking away with a man holding his hand, to me, that child wouldn't bat an eyelid.
It occurred to me that perhaps it was an adult that suggested that to the little girl.
I think that. I do think that. I think if she said that, I think an adult's put those words in her mouth. That's what it sounds like to me. And I mean, I don't think that if it just doesn't make sense to me. If that child has been snatched by someone deliberately, I can't imagine that guy just strolling down the street, walking the kid's hand. If a child goes missing, people are immediately on it. It would have to be swift. You'd have to basically grab and get out, as normally happens with child kidnappings. The kid is taken and they're off. They're gone. I don't think having a stroll with a child holding their hand and in no urgency or hurry to get away from the scene, if it's been a deliberate act, just doesn't make sense to me.
Additionally, people are much more likely to report a child walking away with a fully grown man than they are a teenage girl.
Absolutely.
So, you know, you'd think, oh, that's her wee brother. She's taken him somewhere. Do you know what I mean? The same with the James Bulger case. You know, maybe a big brother and his friend. That's what they thought. It didn't raise alarm bells immediately as a fully grown adult carrying a kicking, screaming toddler.
Yes, that's it. And I think that's the thing here. If that child had genuinely walked away with somebody holding the hand, nobody would raise an eyebrow at that if it was another child. Because like you say, in the James Bulger case, those two boys took him by the hand and walked him out of that shopping centre. Nobody would bat an eyelid at that. But like you say, a kicking, screaming child being taken by, you know, a lone man, for example, would
absolutely raise eyebrows.
It would raise eyebrows. It would draw glances, for sure. Mm-hmm. People would see it. They would report it. They would know there was something wrong. A child walking away with a teenage girl, potentially, I don't think anyone would bat an eyelid.
No, not at all.
Not at all.
If you do have any information at all whatsoever, no matter how insignificant it seems, please do contact Police Scotland. You can contact them on 101 in the UK. Alternatively, you can contact the charity Missing People at missingpeople.org.uk, and they can pass information on to the police. And if you ask them not to, they won't pass on your details. You can also contact Donna Davidson, that's Sandy's sister, through the Facebook page Help Find Sandy Davidson. Alternatively, you can anonymously contact Crime Stoppers online or by telephone on 0800 555 111. Joanna, do you have something to cheer me up a little bit, please?
I do. So, flying the royal flag. Considered the unofficial national flag of Scotland, the lion rampant, historically and legally, belongs to a king or queen of Scotland. According to an Act of Parliament passed in 1672, it is an offence to fly this flag unless on a royal residence or with the permission of the monarch. Today it is flown at Balmoral Castle or the Palace of Holyrood House when the queen is not in residence.
That's quite funny because I know lots of places I've driven past, especially in dodgy areas where there are millions of them.
Definitely.
By which I mean I've got one in my front garden. I do not have one in my front garden.
And for our listeners that are out with Scotland that don't know what we're talking about when we mention the lion rampant, the Scottish flag itself is just blue with a white diagonal cross over the top. That's the Scottish flag.
It's called the saltire.
A saltire, yeah. The unofficial flag of Scotland is the lion rampant, and it's basically it's a yellow
and
flag with a red lion, isn't it? Yeah.
Yellow background with a red lion.
Yeah, and that's the unofficial flag of Scotland. So that's what our flact relates to.
I love that we've got two, well, actually three flags.
What's the third one?
Well, Union, United Kingdom.
Oh, yeah.
And we did have the EU. Oof, tough subject.
Yeah. Don't go there.
Let's not go there. No, but we've got that. And then we still don't have a genuine animal. We've still got the unicorn, which is just ridiculous.
Like, what do you mean?
Our national animal in Scotland is the unicorn.
No.
Yes.
No.
Yes.
What?
If you look at your passport and there's like a crest at the top of the passport and on one side there's a lion and on the other side there's a unicorn. The unicorn represents Scotland. James II wholeheartedly embraced a legend with a unicorn in it, and the unicorn became the symbol of purity and power that Scottish kings and nobility identified with in the 15th century. Over time, this led to the unicorn becoming officially recognised as Scotland's national animal. Also, interestingly, when I popped in that query into Google, people have been asking the question, enough people for this to come up as a suggested question, do unicorns exist in Scotland? Which I really enjoy. Like, they're not even querying really the fact that that's our national animal. They're like, oh cool, well they must exist in Scotland then. That makes so much sense.
Yeah, they live amongst the haggis that fly on the hills.
The haggis that have two legs longer than the others, they can run around the hills and not fall off.
Yeah, and they're fat and they can't run very fast because they're fat little bodies. You know, they can barely take off.
Haggis hunting season, prime time.
I love haggis hunting. I mean, it's my favourite pastime, you know. Yeah. You don't even need to go out with a gun, you know, just a net.
Scoop them up. Classic haggis mating call.
Yeah. But, you know, you can spot them quite far off as well because they wear the See You Jimmy hats and they've got the orange hair. They're just dead easy to spot. You don't even really need to hunt them.
So when they try and play the bagpipes with those tiny wee legs, it gets me.
It doesn't help, they've got no lips. Thank you for listening. If you've enjoyed our podcast, we would love it if you left us a 5-star rating or review on Apple Podcasts. If you would like to connect with us, you can email us for any case suggestions at info@murdershespoke.net. And you can also find us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Thanks, and we'll see you next week.